You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to Stop Hammer Time, and we bring you a cautiously optimistic Stop Hammer Time this week as we have stopped the rot, or at least kept the rot at the same level, or perhaps hardened the rottened areas with some kind of epoxy rot hardening substance with a clattering 4-0 defeat of Nottingham Forest. Here to talk about it, myself and my special guest, it is broadcaster, journalist and writer Sam Delaney.
Hello, hello, mate. Phil. What a pleasure to be here.
A writer, very apropos, because you have a new book out.
Let's plug that first and foremost.
Definitely.
It's called
Sort Your Head Out,
Mental Health Without the Bollocks. And it's sort of like it's a bit of a memoir. It's about mental health. It's about how and why I gave up drink 8 years ago. And but it's basically written, I think, for the average bloke in the street. It's devoid of, I've tried to make it funny, not earnest, and it's very honest, and it's about my whole life, and there's bits and bobs about supporting West Ham and a lot about how football played a role in my sort of mental health and particularly in my drinking, you know, growing up as a football fan, but I've tried to make it funny too and fun, and just try to keep it clear of all the psychobabble that I think puts a lot of blokes off reading these kind of books.
Yeah. I've listened to quite a lot of episodes of your podcast, The Reset, which is a sort of mental health podcast, isn't it? Mm. And quite often the supporting of football and the, you know, fraternity of people that coalesce around football has come up in that podcast. It was mentioned in the one with my friend Max Dickens, who was a football fan, but you talked about it because
he wrote a book about friendship, male friendship.
Billy No Mates or something, I think it was called. Yeah,
that's right.
And, you know, it's a kind of interesting, it is an interesting topic. Curiously, a lot of the extended circle of people I go to watch West Ham with or meet, you know, before and after the game, didn't go on Saturday to the Forest game. It just felt like, I don't want to see him play. Forest, I don't want to go to that game.
It's funny you should say that because my son, Lenny, who's 11 and who I have a, you know, who sits next to me, we've got season next to each other, and, you know, really, I'm not going to go on about the book, but really, like, the way in which my life's changed is I still see all my old mates at West Ham, but I used to just be, like a lot of people, just, like, in the pub from, like, midday onwards until 3 o'clock kickoff, and then in the pub afterwards till closing. And now I go with my son and it's a whole different experience, and I watch games sober and I love it, and he's very passionate about West Ham as well, and that's really enjoyable in a different way. But on Saturday we got as far as the tube station. My wife was dropping us off at the tube station to get and he for the first time ever he suddenly got the ump and said, I'm not coming. And he couldn't really explain why. He said, I'm tired, I'm grumpy, I don't feel like it. And So it's a similar thing. It's probably similar to your mates. He kind of thought, I'm done with this lot. I'm miserable. I just don't feel like going to watch us lose another game, which, let's be honest, I think most of us could have envisaged. I mean, I envisaged us losing it 1-0. Anyway, cut a long story short, after the game, I called him up on the train on the way home. And I hope you won't mind me
reading
this.
To gloat.
No, he was crying.
Oh, no.
Which I thought it was good. It showed the passion. He was crying because he was so gutted to have missed a 4-0 win. And he'd been waiting ever since we signed Danny Ings to see Ings start a game. He'd been desperate for Ings to start a game. And for him to have started and then scored twice and for him to have missed all of these things, he was absolutely gutted. And I said, well, don't worry. Looks like we've turned the corner. There'll be other days like this. And he went,
yeah,
I just don't think there will be, Dad. And I thought, well, at least he's a realist.
Did you go to the Liverpool 3-0, with Lanzini and Payet?
Anfield?
Yeah.
I went to that on my own.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Because I could have gone to that and didn't go. I just thought, oh, fuck. I think you and I might have spoke sort of just leading up to that game. And
funny enough, that was the first ever away game I did sober. That was back in 2015 in the August.
Yeah.
Bilic. It was just at the very beginning of Bilic's era.
Yeah.
And I'd never done it. I think I'd only been to a couple of games because it was only the third, fourth game of the season. I'd been a couple at Upton Park. And then I was at the Edinburgh Festival. Just, up there watching a few shows.
Yeah, I used to miss the first couple of games of every season because I was doing a show up at Edinburgh.
So because I'm an idiot and from the South, I genuinely thought I managed to get two tickets and I genuinely thought, oh, well, I'll be in Edinburgh anyway. So I can just nick down to Liverpool on the way home, right? Doesn't work like that. You just think the whole North is interconnected. It was like, obviously, it's about like 3 or 4 hours with a couple of changes from Edinburgh to Liverpool. Yeah, at least it was that day. But it was quite fun. I went on my own. I thought, I wonder what this will be like, because away days in particular for me were just all about the drinking. And and I went and had a really good time. I actually did meet a guy up there and, because I had a spare ticket as it transpired. Maybe it was you who was supposed to have it. I don't know. But anyway, I just had a good day out. I had a really good day out and it's very memorable. And of course, it was the first time we broke our Anfield hoodoo that day, didn't we? Because it was the old stat was trotted out, was we hadn't beaten them since Love Me Do was at number one.
Yeah, 50 years or something, wasn't it? Yeah. Mm. Yeah, yeah. No, I still deeply regret. I think because Jim, who has an away season ticket and can get two tickets, he didn't go either. Just kind of like went,
because you just think, well, that's the last game. For years, even more than you'd have more hope at Old Trafford. Occasionally, we've done things at Old Trafford, like Di Canio in the cup, and we'll get on to talking about that because we're playing them tonight. So it's not unheard of for us to nick wins at Manchester United, even.
Yeah,
but Anfield, it was like, forget it. That's never happening.
Hoodoo. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And of course, we, that season, I think it might have been, within a couple of games of that, we'd beaten Arsenal as well with Zerati and Lanzini scored goals, didn't they?
Yeah.
Maybe Lanzini didn't, someone else.
Absolutely great season, really, wasn't it? That one?
Yeah, it was.
Last season,
it was. But in the run up to the Forest game at the weekend, it's a sort of funny, we'd had that Spurs game and, there was a lot of fury after that Spurs game. What was infuriating, and this is the first season I felt this, it's funny, isn't it? Football's a kind of quite a simple game, but I still see things that I've never seen before and also feel things I've never felt before. What this season, watching us play well is actually dispiriting because we know we're not going to score. So the whole first half against Spurs, the end of the ground we were in, they kicked towards us in the second half. So in the first half, the ball was in Spurs' half for most of the first half. We were playing really well, but just looked like we weren't going to stick the ball in the net. And I'm going, I don't think I've ever been in this situation where I'm watching us play really well and that's making me depressed because I know we're not going to stick the fucking ball in the goal. And it's like the better we play, the more I go, oh yeah, taunt us with your good football because they're just not going to stick the ball in there. So, you know, we did it four times at the weekend. So it was
the
great.
The floodgates finally opened. And when you look at it now, it was a psychological thing because Moyes, I don't feel, as much as he says, oh, we tried to change our approach this season, I don't think Moyes has ever really fundamentally changed his approach to a game. I think from day one, his approach to every game is don't let them score and the goals will look after themselves. So as has been quite well documented now, he doesn't even work on the coaching ground with on attacking play. Because his belief is you have to stop the opposition and a goal, ultimately goals come. They own goals get scored, scrappy goals get scored. Most goals come from set pieces. So there's really no point in wasting time. You have to put everything into working out how to stop the opposition. And I think he was like that right from the start. And actually, in the last couple of seasons, there were periods where we were scoring for fun.
Yeah.
And so he, you know, understandably, he began to think, well, I'm right. No one can argue with me because my teams are actually quite free scoring, despite the fact that I put no emphasis on scoring goals at all.
Yeah.
So I'm a cautious manager and that works. But he's run out of luck because we stopped scoring and there seemed to be, in the end, a psychological issue with scoring, whereas there was a period, obviously during the Lingard sort of era in particular, but also at times last season, where you genuinely thought we would outscore the opposition. We could always score because Antonio was scoring, Bowen was scoring, Benrahma, Suchek was scoring for fun, like huge number of goals. So we got these goals all the time. Our centre-backs were all scoring from corners. Every time we got a corner, you thought there was going to be a goal.
Absolutely.
And now it's just stopped. But I hope that it was just psychological and that... you know, and that now that we've kind of broken that hoodoo, that the team will go out there with more confidence. Certainly, Phil, it is amazing that we have three strikers at the club, having spent years with one/none.
Yeah.
And all three of them offer something a bit different. And all three of them are very capable of scoring goals. And that's even before you factor in Bowen, who is kind of like last season was our main source of goals. Not quite a striker, but is the fourth member of that lineup. The frustrating thing is Moyes will never, ever, ever, ever play more than one striker. But
if
you look at this as a relegation battle, which I think it definitely is, and you size up who we're up against, you've got to back us to prevail simply on the basis that we've got proven Premier League goal scorers and a number of them.
Yeah. I mean, the encouraging thing for I guess a West Ham fan as opposed to the fans of other teams as well is that we since the turn of the year, certain players now look as if they're kind of back to their best. And it's, you know, it's not quite the proverbial they're like a new signing, but you know, the way Suchek has played in the last couple of games, the way Soufal has played in the last kind of four or five games, and Bowen since the turn of the year, those are the guys that we had like 2 years ago. You know, they're playing at the level they were a couple of years ago, and that is gives me a huge... I mean, after the Spurs game, again, that was what part of what I felt about that was like, it was very depressing to see us play very, very well over there and just not put the ball in the net. And that's the reason we lost that game. It was encouraging to see those guys back to something like their best. Suchek was really good against Spurs. I mean, you know, we lost the game 2-0, but he was very good in it.
Yeah.
I thought he was great on Saturday, and I thought Paqueta was really good.
Yeah, very. He had a great game, Paqueta. Paqueta, if we can just get through this season, he's not provided the... I think Moyes said he was looking for kind of 10 goals, 10 assists from him, and he's nowhere near that. And but if we can just get him through this season and keep him happy and he doesn't go in the summer, which I think there's a chance he might, because he might just think, this isn't working out. But if he does stay on, I think that... you know, he could be one of those players who, you know, this was just him finding his feet. He's done all right. He's done enough and he's shown enough glimpses that he could become very dominant next year.
Well, I thought what whilst, you know, watching him at the weekend, I thought that this possibly, you know, Souček and Paqueta and maybe Flynn Downes, that could be the formula for when Rice goes.
Absolutely. Because, I mean, it ticks
Paqueta
a lot of
boxes, was all over the bit because he's. Because he's got a lot of flair, but he's sort of got a really good engine as well. You know, what he did for that second goal wasn't just the kind of Gazza-type flick of the ball in the air over the head of the centre-back. It's the fact that he just barged the centre-back out of the way and won a physical competition. Yeah. And, you know, Rice, who also had a terrific game against Forest, you know, has that great reading of the game and sort of nicking the ball off an attacking player's foot in a kind of dangerous position for us. Paqueta does a bit of that as well. And I mean, I think that's what he does for Brazil. He's much more sort of box to box and a bit more meat and potatoes than I think Moyes envisaged.
Yeah, he's a Brazilian. So Moyes has thought, well, he's a number 10. He's a number 10. Yeah. He'll float about and do flicks and tricks. That's not quite the sort of player he is. I think probably in Brazil, by Brazilian standards, he's considered their Jordan Henderson.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I think he's a box-to-box, hard-working midfielder. But obviously, being Brazilian, he also has a great technique and moments of magic in his locker, as they all tend to do. So I think that's a good thing. You know, we've got players like Benrahma who can play that kind of number 10 role. Probably more suitable. We do have those kind of players, but I think Paqueta is much more than that, and he will be a great asset, in particular when Rice leaves. Who knows, maybe these players down Souček and Paqueta will step out of the shadow. Here, I heard something from a pretty decent source close to, let's say, the Declan Rice camp, that Declan Rice, whilst he sort of accepted that he would probably leave in the summer, he has said to the sort of slight amazement of his like sort of close team, he said, well, yeah, I mean, I probably will leave unless we get relegated. And they've gone, what are you talking about? And he said, well, look, listen, I'm the club captain. I can't, this is my club. I love West Ham. We can't get relegated. And then I do the off. It's like the worst thing I could possibly do. If we get relegated, I have to get us back up. Then I can go. So, I mean, a lot of people have, you know, on my podcast, The New Irons, I ran this past Rashane, who obviously has sort of got more insight and connections than me to this sort of thing. And he shat on this. Little rumor that I'd picked up that I was very proud of, because I will not reveal my source, but it was extremely close to Declan Rice, and they was like, "Oh yeah, he won't dream of leaving if you go down." I don't know how I felt about that. I don't know if it made me feel that I wanted us to go down, but no, of course it didn't.
I thought they sort of filled the gaps in between midfield and strikers as well. You know, part of the problem of not scoring any goals was, like, times we put Scamacca up front, times we had Antonio up front, they were sort of isolated. There's a big sort of moat between the midfield and the attacking players, despite the fact that, you know, there were times that you thought, well, Declan is supposed to be kind of, you know, possibly one of Europe's best midfielders, but actually we're getting beaten by balls through the midfield, and the midfield isn't actually linking with the strikers very well. There's two of his jobs that seem to sort of not really be getting done. But at the weekend, maybe it was the sort of Souček revival that seemed to get Benrahma and Bowen and everyone a little bit closer to Ings. Though it was really telling that Ings had to more or less start and finish that first goal.
Yeah, the first goal was great, wasn't it? It was Roy the Rovers, that, picking up the ball, spraying it, and then arriving in the box late to finish off the opportunity.
Absolutely, yeah.
Just what we've been hoping to see from him. And I think now, even if all three strikers are fit, which fingers crossed looks like they're going to be, I think he's secured that starting position for the time being.
Definitely.
But, absolutely fantastic to have Scamacca and Antonio as options on the bench for when we need goals. I mean, that's really exciting, isn't it?
I think Antonio, you know, people have been saying Antonio off the bench since probably the Pellegrini days, you know, when we got Yarmolenko and still had Arnautovic and, you know, various other sort of midfielders that had goals within them, Felipe Anderson. You were sort of thinking, right, this year Antonio probably won't get a kick, really, but he'll be a fantastic impact sub, you know, with playing tired legs, you know, after 75 minutes or something. But actually, you know, he, a bit like Mark Noble, there were various times when we thought we were going to sort of see Mark Noble, you know, when Scott Parker came, Mark Noble's not, he's going to be a sort of squad player, but somehow his consistency and the fact that you could really sort of rely on him to, you know, work his nuts off of the team always got him back in. And it's been the same with Antonio. But I do think that, you know, as a kind of impact sub, he's just a very good sort of deployment anyway. It's no kind of disrespect to him that, because, you know, he's whatever, 31 now or something. It's like, you know, he is kind of closing in on possibly the end of his career or a step down to the championship or something. So the idea of him coming off the bench, you know, and you used to get like a Manchester United, Solskjaer used to relish coming off the bench. If he had to play 90 minutes, it would have been, he would have had to have a cigarette break.
Well, I remember in the past he used to, you know, when he first arrived at the club, he was a sub quite a lot. And he was always, when he was more of a winger, he was always, fantastic kind of option from the, because the sort of player he is, when you've got tired legs, defenders, he's an absolute nightmare. So, you know, there's that Scamacca. I was looking at a little compilation that someone put together on YouTube of his goals, not in Italy, but since he came to us, and you forget the season, he got a few in the Conference League and he got some absolute, there was a little run where it looked like he was going to start scoring every week before the injury started to get to him again. And you forget, but you know, we've still got an absolutely top class striker there, you know, who eventually, you know, he's younger than the other two. Eventually, I still hope he will go on to be our first choice striker and really deliver again, like Paqueta, I think, you know, maybe in his second season. If he opts to stay, obviously there's rumours surrounding him at the moment as a result of him changing his agent sort of abruptly. But if we can keep hold of him as well, I think those players have not perhaps hit the ground running as much as we would have hoped, but have certainly shown enough for us all to feel confident they're going to get better and better.
Well, it was a sort of unfortunate coming together of these guys arriving just as several of our players that are already there had huge drops in form. Again, the two Czech boys and Bowen, got the season off to a very sort of slow start. And now if things come into focus where everyone's playing at least 70% at the same time, we could really sort of do things. Just got to really get this half of the season out of the way, sort of, you know, hopefully stay up fairly comfortably and with a bit of confidence about what we can do next year. So, you know, there's reasons to be kind of cautiously optimistic, aren't they? I thought that we, you know, there were just, like the Spurs game, there were good performances all over the pitch. But on Saturday, you know, with the inclusion of Ings, it sort of clicked. I think we can pick up some points. And in fact, you know, like that little graphic that the BBC does when it does the Premier League table, where it shows the last five games, just to give an indication of form, we were the best form in the bottom half of the table with our last five games, because it was two wins, two draws and one defeat. You know,
we're going in the right direction.
It is
frustrating. It is, you know, it's frustrating. We've nowhere near hit the form that we used to see in a year or so ago, it's coming up for 18 months ago now since we were really firing. I mean, I said to my mate as we were leaving, I said, actually, the last time, because everyone was buzzing, came out of London Stadium, there was, I don't know if you spotted the rainbow, Phil.
It was an absolute
sensational rainbow. Yeah. Full arc. I'd never seen a full arc in real life before, had you?
No. Well,
you don't sound that excited by it, mate. I mean, these are really the incredible moments. You've won 4-0 and there's a full arc rainbow right over Stratford. Mind blowing, right?
Yeah.
And
It'll be in a film. It'll be when they make a film. When the club sells a DVD of that, did you ever watch the DVD the club made of the away Spurs performance where Ravel scored?
No. Oh no, I didn't watch that. No.
No, they should have made a DVD of that game with the rainbow in it.
They should have done. Yeah, it was like genuinely like the rainbow that you saw in the TV show Rainbow.
Yeah, yeah.
Which
paint the whole world with a rainbow.
Exactly right, and that's what I sang to myself as I left the ground. I was delighted, but the buzz that there was amongst the fans as we all walked out was the last time I can remember everyone leaving feeling like that. It was almost a year ago because it was Seville at home. That was the last great match. We've been pretty poor ever since then. The only other good result we had was, of course, Lyon away in the next round, but that was away. Yeah. So not many people were there, you know, to actually see it. I remember having a good night watching it on the box, but that was it. So actually, we've won not many games at all in the last year at the London Stadium. And even the ones we have, I mean, I felt we were pretty lucky against Fulham. Everton was just an embarrassment. It was like, who's going to be shitter? You know, and we all knew. We won 2-0, but there was nothing much positive to take away from that game. The wins, I can't remember the other kind of handful of like sort of dreary wins that we've achieved. So actually, I couldn't remember since Seville at home, leaving that stadium with everyone just feeling great and positive and exhilarated and optimistic about the next games that are coming up. I feel optimistic about tonight at Old Trafford. And I even feel fairly optimistic about Brighton away, although that one's harder. In some ways, you think, well, we've got a better chance of getting a result at Old Trafford than we have at Brighton, because at least at Old Trafford, they're probably going to rest a few players. They're just off the back of the League Cup. And you know, our players might raise their game because, you know, they do sometimes, you know, players when they go and play against Manchester United. Brighton on the other.
I'll be interested to see who he picks, whether he wants to sort of pick a kind of full strength team.
Well, Ings is cap tied, so there'll be
That's right. He can't play any.
Scamacca apparently is close to full fitness, so he does have a choice to make between Antonio and Scamacca up front, I guess.
Yeah, I think he'll start Antonio. I think he'll
most likely. Yeah,
ready. Yeah, yeah. But it'd be interesting to see, you know, if other kind of fringe players come in. Of course, our sort of our tournament goalkeeper is now our goalkeeper because Fabianski's got a cracked cheekbone. So now, and again, you know, a lot of people have been saying they wanted Areola to play, and now they've got their wish because it's enforced. So you know, I guess he'll play. He'll play tonight. He is a very good shot stopper. I like him.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+. Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Interesting that it was a little bit like sort of karma for Fabianski, sort of chickens coming home to roost, in that his reticence to come off his line is one of the faults in his game. And if he had been off his line a little bit more briskly, he might not have got a knee in the face like he did the weekend, because you know, there were two defenders.
What you're saying is he's only got himself to blame.
Yes.
And
yes,
you don't have any sympathy with him.
Not
he
really.
Deserved to get his face smashed in.
Yeah, face smashed in, absolutely.
I think that we're really lucky to have a player like Areola as our backup keeper. I don't think there's many clubs in the whole Premier League who would be able to lose their first choice and bring in someone of such high quality. Someone who I would say at least 50% of fans would want to be our first choice keeper in any case. So,
yeah, I think so, yeah.
And I think that Moyes' attitude was, you know, Fabianski usually does pick up an injury at some point during the season. So it's clear that he sort of thought, well, a moment will come where he picks up an injury, Areola gets in, and after that, it immediately becomes Areola's position to lose, right? Yeah. I think Areola, unless he plays badly and we go on a run of bad results and he makes actual glaring errors, I think that's his now.
Yeah,
to the end of the season, irrespective of what happens to Fabianski. Even if Fabianski comes back within 2 weeks, he probably won't anyway. But do you see what I mean? I think this is the opportunity that he's been waiting for, as sad as it is for Fab.
I wonder what he'll do in midfield. I wonder if he will. I wonder if Fornals or Lanzini might come in this evening, because I think he's going to have an eye on the Brighton game.
Yeah.
You know, he does like to sort of send everyone out to play every game for some reason, except in Europe, when he's quite loyal to his European team.
Yeah.
But quite often, you know, you get a lot of senior players playing in, you know, domestic cups. But
I think we'll see Downs for sure. I think we'll see Downs. I don't know at whose expense. I can't quite envisage him resting Rice, although there must be a temptation to do so, because obviously he's our most important player.
Yeah.
And you know, if you and we, because we do have options in midfield, but going to Old Trafford in the FA Cup, you need your captain leading you out, don't you? There's an injury to Koufal, which means that it's likely that Johnson will stay at right back and Cresswell will be at left back. But Cresswell, you know, he's dropped right down the pecking order, to the extent that Moyes started with a right back at left back, which says a lot to where Cresswell is now in the pecking order. And I think that's right. I mean, I've always loved Cresswell. I think he's a brilliant club legend, but he is, his legs have totally gone. You can't, well, there's no coming back from that goal we gave away against Brentford where the striker gave him, like, I believe it was a 50-yard head start.
It was, wasn't it?
It was a 50-yard head start. Half the entire pitch he had, and yet he still was beaten to the ball by, I can't remember the name of the winger for Brentford.
Yeah. It wasn't Tony, was it? I think it might have been Tony.
It wasn't Tony, it was Silva. I think his name's Silva.
Yeah, and I mean, he came on at the weekend because there was Emerson to bring on at the weekend.
I don't think he likes Emerson at left back. He only fancies Emerson at left wing back. It's a very specific position, that. Isn't it? Left wing back. It's like he only works in a very specific formation. So it's strange to spend £10 million on a player who can only play in one specific scenario.
Yes, because
he can't play left wing and he can't play left back. He can play left wing back. So unless you're playing that system, there's no way he can be in the team.
No, you know, it's very strange,
even Masuaku would sometimes play left midfield, left wing.
Yeah,
you know, he would sometimes, but no,
he was absolutely catastrophic as a left back, though, wasn't he? I think I went to his first game, which was away at West Brom, and one of the first things he did was handle the ball twice, just so that the referee got the idea of handball. I think he worried that the referee had forgotten what the handball rule was, so he did it once, and then it wasn't as if, you know, it wasn't like it bounce from one hand to the other hand. He did it a good few seconds after he'd first done it.
And he called out to the referee as well, watch this.
I'm handling the ball. Yeah, exactly.
Have a look at this. Look, guess what I'm going to do now? That's right.
Yeah.
I touched it with my hand. That's not allowed, is it?
He took his gloves off like Adrian did when he took that penalty. Yeah. He took his gloves off and then announced, I'm going to pick the ball up now the second time.
Masuaku, I always describe him as a psychedelic footballer. A footballer who had sort of decided to subvert the very art form that he was involved in.
Yeah.
Like, he was going to take football and deconstruct it in front of our eyes every week. I love him for that. I think he's fantastic. I'll always love him forever. He's a legendary player. He's a player that I've never seen the light before, and doubt I will again.
No, you can't tell whether he's happy or sad.
No.
He's an enigma. He's an enigma
wrapped in a conundrum,
capable of feats of great skill.
Yeah, also, I mean, that was the other thing that made it so amazing, yeah, is that he would sort of do really weird things, like just start handballing or almost on moves. But then, like, and then just he's be useless bloke, at defending. He? And then and then all of a sudden he'd be like Lionel Messi for like five minutes. Incredible.
Yeah, it was brilliant. It was brilliant. Yes, I hope that injury to Su Fau is not bad, because he was really starting to look like the guy we first signed after a kind of bewildering lapse in form, you know. We were saying last week on the podcast that you know, there was an incredibly worrying, talking of rainbows and things that augur for the future, there was a lot of kind of parallels with the 2003 season where we went down, not the least of which was sort of a crucial game where we missed a penalty quite early in the season, which was Rice missing against Forest away and Kanute missing against Arsenal, which really did sort of herald the beginning of some very shit months of football, which actually could have been very good. But also, you know, Glenn Roeder, you know, to his credit, had no idea that Sinclair and Schemmel were just going to start the season so badly and continue to play so catastrophically badly compared to how they had played in previous years. And they're similar with you know, the Czech boys and Bowen this season. And
very strange. It just happened.
All three of them.
I mean, it happened when we moved into the... you've seen it. The other classic example of this was the team under Pardew that went from getting to the cup final.
Yeah.
And then the next year, it was the same set of players turned up. And, you know, Ben Ayoun, Rio Coca, all of these players who'd been sensational were all suddenly useless.
And
there's just no rhyme or reason to it. And players often don't know themselves. I remember working at TalkSport and chatting to Danny Gabadon about that and going, you know, all due respect, but I've never seen a group of players transform so quickly and so radically as that team did, from looking like at times unbeatable to being useless. What was it? You know, and this is years later, so I don't think he had much to hide. He said, you just sometimes, you just don't know. There's something where you've got this momentum and then you take a break for the summer, you come back and there's something in the mood that's hard to sort of fathom. And people just don't have that same buzz about them. They don't have that same confidence going into every game. They're overthinking stuff. And, you know, it happened with that team. It happened the season we moved into the London Stadium, you know, the last season Upton Park with Bilic had been unreal. And then all those same players the following season really, really struggled, you know. And it's really, really hard. But then you see it happening the other way around as well. Oops. Sorry about that, Phil. I have a young puppy, as you know.
Yes.
Operating here in my podding suite. And someone's had the temerity to knock at the door, just giving you live updates here. And obviously, puppies take exception to that. I'm just
They get excited by it.
They do, excited and angry all at the same time. Confused, might be a bone. Hungry.
Amazon bringing a bone.
In their imagination, it's always a tubby, ruddy-faced, jolly butcher who's knocking on the door with a really long string of sausages.
String of sausages that
are going spare.
Yeah.
You know, and he said these were meant for delivery to someone up the road, but unfortunately she's passed away. And so I have to offload them today or they'll go bad. Do you know anyone or anything that may be interested in this string of juicy pink sausages? That's what my puppy is imagining and hoping for every day of her absurd life.
Tiny dreams. Doggy dreams.
Simple to be a puppy in many ways.
It is worrying playing Brighton at the weekend. But again, I mean, I think I sort of feel that the kind of frustration we as fans have had, they must have as well. I think they're sort of aware that they, you know, the relief at the end of that game, Rice came up after the Forest game to the fans and was literally making a brow mopping gesture with his hand, which, because I think it, you know, I mean, they're not idiots. They know exactly what the fans are watching, which is a kind of frustrating performance. of people just playing football pretty well, but just not sticking it in the net, and to just do it four times. Like you said earlier, it feels like it could be, and we're being wildly optimistic now, or at least I am, something that sort of breaks that hoodoo, you know. Yeah, I mean, obviously Ings can't play tonight, but he can play against Brighton. I'm sort of, you know, if we could come away with a point from Brighton, that would be great, because they really are just our sort of nemesis at the moment.
Yeah, I expect nothing. So a point would be, it's weird to say, but against Brighton, a point at this stage feels like party time. But, you know, the other thing to remember is Moyes is still Moyes. He's not going to react to us winning 4-0 by changing anything. He'll think that's vindication for him. And we will go and probably play five at the back against Brighton and revert to exactly the same way we played against Tottenham. And he thinks, you know, there, but for the grace of God, if we'd nicked a goal against Tottenham, right, we had that early chance, didn't we?
We did.
Hit wide. He believes that if we can nick one against these teams, we'll then be perfectly capable of holding out for 3 points. And he might be right about that. And he's not going to suddenly, off the back of a 4-0 victory at home to Forest, go, right, I think this team's ready to be unleashed. No way. Expect the same performance as we delivered against Tottenham. And if we lose, we lose. But if we win, he'll, you know, he'll be saying, I mean, Roshane asked him in the press conference, you play, fans are getting frustrated saying you're a cautious manager. Is that fair? And I think he expected him to say, no, I don't mean that's fair. And he said, yeah, it is fair. I am a cautious manager. Yeah. That's why I've survived so long in the game. You know, a lot of managers get carried away with pleasing the fans or thinking that it's all about, you know, non-stop attractive football. And that's why they haven't had careers as long as mine. He said, you know, I am cautious. I'm about stopping goals first and foremost, worrying about that and that alone. And he said, and by the way, in those first 2 years where we finished sixth and seventh and had the run in Europe, he said, my tactics were just the same. I was cautious then too. The difference was that those games that are quite tight and close, we just kept managing to like nick them if it was in the balance. And in other times, you know, our attacking players were really running free. So, but my tactics didn't change and no one was complaining or calling me cautious, because if you're winning, no one notices. So I guess there's some logic in what he's saying.
I feel he is kind of legislating for a kind of evolution of our style, though, because I think the sort of purchases of Aguerd and Paqueta and, you know, Scamacca, they are ballers, you know, because
they're progressive players.
Because I think it is that, you know, obviously it was a very odd season when you know, the end of the relegation dogfight and then the, you know, the really good sixth place finish season, a lot of those guys would play behind closed doors, so they were slightly odd, but our you know, people, teams did seem to be caught out by our kind of soak it up and hit them on the break style. But you know, that style, second half of the season we finished seventh in, was really not Washingbury. We finished that season quite badly, really. I think he, you know, it feels like he saw that and was saying, we've got to be a team that, if a team does sit back, we can kind of unlock the door, you know. And we have signally failed to do that this season. Until this point, you know, again, I think for the first time this season, it might have been against Brentford, where we had a huge amount of possession and you could see an attack building and you could almost see the players' heads go down because we were building an attack, because they didn't know what to do. They just went up one flank, got as far as they could, didn't get to the byline to cross it, turned back, passed it to Rice. Rice switched it over to Soufal. It was very often started on the left and went over to the Rice. Well, then the cross came over when they had everyone back to defend.
We're so obsessed with keeping our shape, even in possession, that it's really hard, unless the opposition make a big error, then it's really hard for us to kind of break down Premier League teams, because no one will leave their position, because they're always thinking, what happens if we lose possession? Therefore, you know, I mean, Cresswell's not capable of making overlapping runs, even if he wanted to. But whoever's playing at fullback is not going to suddenly burst forward, you know, overlap whoever's playing on the wing. and break through the defence, because they don't want to do that. They're briefed to just hold their shape. So someone gets down the left, and then they always look up, cut back, and play it to Rice, and then Rice switches play, just like you say. And it's like that. No one breaks the lines, and no one leaves their position to surprise the opposition or create a problem for them or overload them, because we're always thinking of the next thing that might happen. You know.
Yeah. What was interesting about Saturday, I thought, was that there was a return with Souček finding his form again. There was a sort of return of that sort of relationship that Rice and Souček had in those couple of good seasons, which you couldn't really define. It was quite a unique position, the closest of which was the relationship of Declan Rice to Calvin Phillips in the England setup, where you couldn't tell which one was the defensive one and which one was the attacking one. They sort of found their roles sort of organically again, like they did a couple of years ago. And that return to that, and I think that's what sort of helps to slightly adapt that quite rigid shape to be a bit more progressive, a bit more attacking, is that we've gone back to a kind of Thomas Souček who just runs around the pitch with no real sort of remit. He just turns up everywhere at every time, you know, like that film. And Paqueta is finding his way to fit in with these two guys as well. And he looks like he has a fairly free role, you know.
Yeah.
And good players will make a role for themselves, won't they? I don't think Di Canio got any instructions when he arrived from Sheffield to play for us.
That was the Redknapp approach generally. Yeah. Those were different times where managers didn't have to be these kind of weird spreadsheet, kind of whiteboard, you know, tactical masters. Harry Redknapp was very much buy good players and tell them to go and play. Do you know what I mean? And sometimes I miss that. I think that there will be another occasion before the end of the season where this team spanks someone again.
Yeah.
Much like if you remember when we in 2020, when it was lockdown and we went into lockdown, had a long break in the football and we were really in trouble and we looked doomed actually. And when we came back from lockdown, we were like, forget it. This team's going down. And suddenly Antonio just started scoring. That was the first time that he converted Antonio from a winger to a centre forward, and he started scoring. And we did, towards the end of that season, after looking like we were doomed after the lockdown break, we actually thumped a couple of sides. There was that Antonio scored four against Norwich, didn't he? And I think this might happen again. I don't want to get ahead of myself. I still think we're in a relegation battle. I still think we're going to have other really bad days where we're back to like bemoaning Moyes' negativity. But I also think, you know, when you're talking about Paqueta, Rice and Souček and that kind of midfield combination of three extremely hardworking but quite talented and dangerous players as well, when they all click, those three players give them a feel, we could just overrun a team and destroy them. So
I
feel that we've still got that to look forward to this year.
Yeah, yeah. And I thought Ings, what was good about him was that he sort of showed the other players what to do. This is what I need, you know. Both of those were like very late arrivals in the box and sort of bundled in off his knee.
Do you know what it reminded me of, mate? Tony Cotty.
Yeah.
Like not necessarily the stuff he did outside the box, but those kind of scrappy sliding into the 6-yard box and trundling it over the line. All due respect to Tony Cotty, probably my all-time favourite West Ham striker, but we hadn't seen someone who scores those. That's what we signed Ings to do, to just poach goals. And he did it. It was just thrilling to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's probably about time to wrap this up. Shall we do predictions for both of the forthcoming games this week? Man U tonight and Brighton at the weekend.
It's okay.
Very difficult to know about tonight because we just don't know how they're
going. I'm going to go out on a limb and say we're going to beat Manchester United tonight. 2-1.
2-1. I'm going to say 1-1, and we might lose on penalties.
Oh, does it go straight to pens these days? No replays?
At this level, do they replay them? Oh, it might. Maybe it'll replay.
I think you get one replay. That's a good
point. Okay, 1-1, I'm going to say, in normal time.
Okay.
What about Brighton?
1-1, I think.
I'm going to say 2-1 to us.
Wow. Are you going? Are you going for a nice
No, I could have done. I could have got, I had a ticket, but I can't go. Are you going to go? Good.
No, we went to that game together once, I think, didn't we? Really great away day, that. But no, I can't make it. Can't get a ticket.
Is that the one where we absolutely chucked it down? And because the stadium's on the top of that sort of hill.
No, it was,
right.
I don't think it was rainy when we went. But yeah, and what about Iron Appa away? Have you got a ticket for Iron Appa away?
I've been to that place, Larnaca, before. In fact, I think I might have somewhere I could stay if I went to it, but I wasn't planning on going.
I think it's 1,400 tickets are being offered to West Ham. So with my 10 priority points, it's very unlikely I'll be going to Iron Appa away. But I just sincerely hope that everyone who does go has a wonderful few days.
Yeah, absolutely. What a lovely thought. Well, that's it for this week's Stop Hammer Time. My name is Phil Whelans, and with me has been Sam Delaney.
Thanks, Phil. Thanks, everyone.
Come on, you Irons.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.